It's time for Youth Sports Now, the only radio show in Rochester dedicated to the excitement, the passion, the development, and well-being of young athletes. From peewee to college athletics, Youth Sports Now brings you expert advice and helps prep young athletes for the game and beyond. Youth Sports Now is sponsored by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester, helping your young athlete achieve their peak physical performance. And presented by McQuaid Jesuit, the area's only all-boys Catholic college prep school for grades 6 through 12. And by TJT Sports Photography, taking the winning shot every time. Here's the host of Youth Sports Now, the lifelong Little Leaguer, Greg Camp.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Youth Sports Now, to another edition of our program, which exists for the sole purpose of making sure that we're informing you, the parents and the coaches and the sports administrators of the kids that we love so dearly, that we're making sure that their well-being is taken care of. You know, on Youth Sports Now, over the course of the last year, we have spoken to lots and lots of great people, whether they be from the professional world of sports or whether they be from the parental world of sports. Or, you know, just your average everyday athletes. I think some of our most popular shows have been the ones with the high school kids and talking to them about their sports and their passions and how they balance everything from homework to nutrition to physical fitness. You know, and one of the things that we've always had discussions about, because quite frankly, it is an age-old question. And the question is this: is cheerleading actually a sport? Now, if you talk to the parents, to the coaches, or to the administrators of cheerleading groups and cheerleading squads, the answer is going to be absolutely it's a sport. Of course it is. And then again, if you talk to others who might be the naysayers or might be the people who are a little bit down about the sport of cheerleading, they will certainly argue that it is not. So I think that's well worthy of a show on Youth Sports Now, and it's been something we've been trying to put together for quite a long time. So there's a couple of things I want to throw at you before we get into it and have you think about it, okay? So the dictionary defines a sport as an athletic activity that requires physical prowess, skill, and often competitive nature. Well, wow. I mean, that sure defines it to me that cheerleading is a sport. And then also, if we really look into it, you know, the first part of that definition, we talk about, you know, the idea that a sport is an athletic activity requiring skill. I'm not sure how many of you have actually paid attention to the cheerleaders besides looking at them based on their looks and so on. But their formations, their flips, their tumbles, their tosses are a little bit difficult to pull off. And I'm not sure if you or one of your friends have ever tried to chuck a 100-pound dumbbell or weight in the air, catch it, and then seem not to, you know, make it look difficult. So I think cheerleading is certainly something that can be considered a sport. But we're going to talk to an expert. That's what we're going to do. And for the very first time on Youth Sports Now, we are going to have a professional cheerleader, one of those cheerleaders that you can turn on a television network on any given Sunday and see on the sidelines at an NFL football game. So when we come back, we're going to debate the issue of cheerleading as a sport with Emmy Thomas, who is a Buffalo Jill, and we'll find out how she started and what she has to do to stay a cheerleader when we come back on Youth Sports Now.
You found it. Youth Sports Now, Rochester's only radio show of its type on WYSL 92.1 FM and 1040 AM, online at WYSL1040.com. We'll be back.
Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training is Rochester's trusted go-to source for sports performance training, injury prevention, and rehabilitation. Peak Performance, where you will find world-class experts just around the corner from your home. Where feeling better, finding confidence, and gaining superior performance are natural. Where traditional one-size-fits-all protocols are defeated by personalized performance plans that are as unique as each athlete. Where you are treated like a professional and are cared for like family. Where evaluation, recovery from injury, return to play, and competitive advantage are in the bag. So whether your athlete is a peewee player, an elite competitor, a seasoned professional, a wannabe weekend warrior, a couch contender, or a still active retiree, Peak Performance is your ticket to exceptional achievement. Make your move. We'll bring out the athlete in you. If Peak Performance is what you want, just ask for us by name. Peak Performance, where you will feel the difference. Call Peak Performance at 218-0240. That's Peak Performance, 218-0240. We'll be expecting you.
I am Little League.
I am Little League!
We are Little League.
I am Little League.
I am Little League.
Sportsmanship, teamwork, character. Little League, big dreams.
Intellectually competent, loving, religious, open to growth, committed to justice. The words used to describe the young men who graduate from McQuaid Jesuit. Educating young men in grades 6 through 12, McQuaid focuses on the entire person, mind, body, and soul. There is a difference at McQuaid Jesuit. Why not find out for yourself? Go to McQuaid.org today to schedule your visit. That's McQuaid.org. McQuaid Jesuit. Live the experience.
Youth sports provide memories for a lifetime, so why not preserve them? TJT Sports Photography offers individual, team, and action photography of your all-stars. Whether you're a parent, league administrator, or school athletic director, visit TJTSportsPhotography.com to see the major league offerings. From peewee through high school, TJT Sports Photography gets the winning shot every time.
Youth Sports Now on WYSL 92.1 FM and 1040 AM.
The Bills make me wanna shout. Kick your heels up and shout. Throw your hands up and shout. Throw your head back and shout. Come on now, the Bills are making it happen now.
And we're back on U Sports Now, and the Bills quite didn't make it happen this year, but we know they keep on trying, and we've got a little bit of a quiz here for you, or some knowledge that I want to pass on to you with some stats, okay, when it comes to youth sports, and especially our topic for today, which is cheerleading. You know that there are at least 4 million cheerleaders in 31 countries, according to the International Cheerleading Association, and that cheerleading is actually over 100 years old, and that it's just been around for over 100 years, and it is, in fact, the cheerleading as we know it today. 97% of all cheerleaders are female. However, almost 50% of collegiate cheerleaders are male. So that's kind of an interesting statistic. And 83% of all cheerleaders have a B grade point average, which is darn good. And 62% of the cheerleaders at the high school and college level also are involved in a second sport. And in case you ever wondered, the cheerleading capital of the United States is Texas. That's the state that has the most cheerleaders of any other state. And lastly, I thought I'd just throw this in there as a special one for you, is that pom-poms were invented in the 1930s. So cheerleading is older than the actual pom-poms. And with us to talk about cheerleading and exactly just how physical of an activity it is and the sport that it is Emmy Thomas. Emmy is a Buffalo Bills cheerleader, the Buffalo Jills. She is originally from Rochester, but she attends school at the University of Buffalo, and she started her career as a dancer and has moved into cheerleading. And her kind of goal, her dream job, as she puts it on the profile page for the Jills, is to perform professionally in theater and dance and aspire others to pursue their passion. So, hey, Emmy, congratulations for a great cheerleading season, and welcome to Youth Sports Now.
Thank you so much.
Hey, you know, we've had this debate where so many people talk about whether or not cheerleading is a sport or not. And I'm not sure if you were on the phone while I was doing the opening segment, but the dictionary defines sport as an athletic activity that requires physical skill and often a competitive nature. And when I go by that definition, I'm absolutely saying that cheerleading is, in fact, a sport. You are a professional cheerleader. What do you say?
I would have to 100% agree with you. We have 4-hour long practices, and hardly any of it is just sitting around. It's physically demanding work from start to finish, and practice aside, the games are even worse.
Well, you know, I can only imagine, but and also the fact that, you know, you can't go out there if you are not somewhat physically fit and exercising and working for a better body if you know, to be a cheerleader, especially at the NFL level. So, you know, I'm sure, or I'll ask, are there other activities that you have to do that are not included in the practices, and what are they? What do you do to stay physically fit and be ready for Sundays?
Yeah, of course. As a Buffalo Jill, we have the great benefit of we all have a free gym membership to Catalyst Fitness. It is our gym in Buffalo. And all of us, we will get together and we'll go take workout classes. Our favorite is Hottie Body. But, yep, we'll go take workout classes, and we're all very much expected to maintain our figure, maintain our stamina, and stay in shape outside of practice as well as inside of practice. We do team workouts.
So, you know, Emmy, when I talked to you earlier today, we discussed a little bit about your background, and it's kind of interesting. After you and I spoke, I did a little bit of research on just the sport of cheerleading, and everything that kept coming up was really two things, not necessarily in order, but everybody talked about the fact that cheerleading is a combination of gymnastics and dance. Now, I know that you started as a dancer, so let's go way back to when you were, you know, maybe 5 or 6 years old. How did you start out, and then ultimately, how did you end up as a professional NFL cheerleader?
Yeah, great question. I have been dancing ever since I was 3 years old. It's just always been something I've done, and I could never imagine my life without dance and not being a dancer. And when it came time to graduate high school, I thought it's something I'd like to continue to do for the rest of my life. So I went to school for it at UB, and while I was there, another girl in the UB dance department, she already actually was a Jill, and she approached me and thought that it would be a great thing for me to come and try out for the team. And tryouts went well, and I've been loving being a cheerleader ever since. And it's definitely, it's been a bit of a shift. I've had to get used to a completely different way of dancing and moving my body, and it's definitely took some getting used to, but it's been a great experience.
Now, you know, there are certain things that happen with cheerleaders as compared to other athletes, if you will. You know, for example, golfers have to go out there and they have to do their sport in front of, you know, a big gallery. And certainly professional sports players at every level, whether it's football, baseball, hockey, they have to do this, you know, in front of big crowds. Cheerleading is also something that has to be done in front of big crowds. First of all, you as a professional, you're out there in front of an NFL crowd every Sunday. So you've got, you know, thousands of people watching you. But if you really, you know, dig down deeper to the young women who are at the high school and even youth cheerleaders, they've got to perform and also compete in tournaments and squad tournaments and so on. So what would you recommend to a young girl who wants to be a cheerleader? Should she know dance? That's number one. That's the first question. And secondly, how do you get over the nerves of maybe performing in front of, you know, thousands of people?
Yeah. Well, first of all, should she dance? There's two different kinds of ways that cheerleading is approached. There's the NFL, which we have a very heavy dance background, and the base of it is all dancing. And then there's more like the high school cheerleading and the college cheerleading, where I give those girls credit. They can tumble, they can throw each other up in the air, and they're really truly amazing to watch. And so they both have two different approaches, but the main goal behind both kinds of cheerleading is performance quality. And it definitely can be nerve-wracking. My first game as a Buffalo Jill was probably the most nervous I've ever been in my life. You see all the screaming fans, though, and you see that no one's there to put you down. Everyone's just excited that you are there as they are excited to see you. So you can't let the pressure of having an audience make you nervous. You have to let it make you more excited and really help your performance quality improve. Would be my best advice.
So with the cheerleading, I mean, let's kind of go through. You said you've got to do this rigorous training. Walk me through a practice, if you will. You know, you've made the squad, and we'll go back to what it was like before you made the squad. But you've made the squad. You are now an NFL cheerleader. And you know that you've got lots of girls and boys, too, of course, watching you because maybe they want to be a cheerleader, whether it be in youth sports or in high school. So when you go to a Jill's practice, walk me through what you do.
Okay. Well, we have a lot to squeeze into a very short amount of time. And a four-hour practice seems like you might have a lot of time, but we don't at all. We start out by we all get in a circle and we warm up and we stretch. To get our muscles loose, and then something we love to do is do a quick team jog. So we'll do a couple laps around the field house at Ralph Wilson Stadium is where we practice. And then we'll come inside, and we will get to work on our big group dances. And each game, we have one third-quarter dance that we get to do and our pregame dance. And especially in the beginning of the season, working on these dances and putting it all together is a huge production. And I give our choreographer so much credit for being able to produce so many dances and such lengthy choreography for such a large amount of girls. So to get us all synchronized and making sure that everything is on point definitely takes a while. And so after we organize all of our big group dances, we will go aside with our separate lines, which is the girls that we travel around the field with, and we will work on cheers, because aside from the dancing, we do sideline cheers to pump up the fans and really get them involved in the game.
And you also mentioned that part of the being a Buffalo Jill is that you do work with youth cheerleaders or youth groups. Tell me a little bit about that and how you work with the young kids and what you do with them.
Yes, this is actually my favorite part about being a Buffalo Jill. We have three Junior Jills programs where we invite young girls from. We have a Munchkins category with young little girls up to 17 years old, so a whole wide range of age groups. And we have a camp in Buffalo, in Rochester, and Toronto as well. And these girls come and they spend a week of workshops warming up with us, learning dances with us, learning little cheers with us. And at the end of the week, we put on an entire production, and the girls get to actually dance at the Ralph and cheer at the Ralph.
Wow, that I'm sure is a big thrill for the kids. That's got to be pretty cool.
It's amazing to see how such something that us as the Jills are so used to is such a big deal to the little ones, and it puts a smile on their face, and it's something that they can go back and see their parents in the stand, and they absolutely, I've heard only good things from the Junior Jills programs. They've absolutely had a great time with it.
Very cool. We are speaking with Emmy Thomas, who is a Buffalo Jill, an NFL cheerleader, and helping us out today with the issue about cheerleading and the activities and whether or not it is, in fact, a sport. And I think we've already established that it is a sport if we just listen to the types of drills and things that Emmy does on a regular basis during the season. So that actually leads into a good question, Emmy. You know, the Bills season is over now. So what happens for you physically in terms of training and practicing and so on during the off season? I mean, I know the players take a break and then they get back into their routines. How do cheerleaders do this again, especially at the professional level?
Yep. Well, like I said, we do have our workout classes that we enjoy at our gym. And so a lot of the times the girls will text each other and email each other, and we'll all try to go to a couple of those classes here and there as a team. And during the small break between each season, it is up to you to maintain your own fitness and keep on top of it. But we start auditions and we start our season as early as April, so we don't get a very long break. So we'll be back at it pretty soon.
So now tell me how it works with the cheerleaders. Do you, much like, you know, in youth cheerleading, whether it be at the younger levels or the high school or college levels, you know, the most of the participants are they make the team, but they still have to try out the next year. So how does it work with you? Are you considered an automatic for the Jills next year, or do you also have to try out?
Nope. Everybody has to re-audition and retry out each year. And it's just another thing to keep us on our toes and make sure that we continue to grow as dancers and as cheerleaders, and that we should be an example for the incoming rookies as veterans now. So everyone re-auditions each year.
Wow, that I'm sure has got to be difficult, especially if someone who has been a veteran or a cheerleader for a couple of years maybe gets cut or isn't on the team this year.
Yes, it's very nerve-wracking, and you have more to lose coming in as a veteran than as a rookie. But it's also a benefit because you know what you're getting yourself into. So it can go both ways, but it's definitely a good time to get to go back and see everybody and re-audition.
So how do you, what do you plan on? I mean, I know we looked at your profile and kind of, you know, checked into your history in terms of, again, you started as a dancer and you know, now going through the cheerleading. You know, what do you think cheerleading provides you for the future? And I guess more specifically, my question is this. You know, you are part of a cheerleading squad, which, you know, to put into other sports terms, you're part of a team. So how does a cheerleader think in terms of team sports, if you will? And then what qualities or what things do you learn as a cheerleader and team player that you hope will help you later on in life?
Yeah, that's a great question, because it's so much more than just a squad. It's the Jills is an entire organization. Aside from everything that we do in practice and on the sidelines, we each have a quota of how many appearances we have the chance to do each season. And so the experiences that I have gained as an ambassador for Buffalo and going on different appearances and getting to meet different people and different charities, that's a really big thing that I've taken away from the organization, and that is only going to help me in the future. And when you come back and you can share your experiences with your teammates, it's really awesome, because we've all gotten to do such different things as Jills with these separate appearances that we go on. And so it's really awesome to be able to share with your teammates when you're excited about something fun that you've gotten to do as a Jill.
So what, you know, what about injuries? Part of the goal and the purpose of our radio show, Youth Sports Now, and we are speaking with Emmy Thomas, who is a Buffalo Jill, just spent her second year on the Buffalo Jills squad for the NFL football team, the Buffalo Bills. You know, part of the show, Emmy, we talk about injuries, and we talk about how to deal with the injuries, especially for the kids at the younger ages who maybe not understand the types of injuries that they can receive from sports. Have you personally ever been injured through, you know, your cheerleading, or even know of any of the other women on the squad who may have been injured through cheerleading? And what type of injury was it?
Yeah, we've had all types of different injuries that we've had to overcome as a team. Most recently, I sprained my ankle at the very beginning of the season, and so I'm a dancer. I've hurt my ankles many times before. I was used to it, but I felt more bad that my teammates had to reformat me out of all of the formations that we had. So during injuries, that's a big thing that everyone has to be ready to overcome whatever they need to and just fall into place in a new spot in the formation. But as the person actually injured, what you have to just know is that you just have to take a break. You have to allow yourself to heal and not try to jump back into it too quickly, and just know that healing time is good time, and that you'll be back in it before you know it.
So actually, you just said something I think wonderful for the kids who are listening out there and the youth sports athletes, that, you know, taking that downtime is important, because, I mean, ultimately, if you don't take the downtime, the injury could in fact be worse, and you may be doing for more sure. damage to your body later on in the year. So, you know, great advice there. Now what happens with a cheerleader when, in fact, you're injured? Do you have to go through rehab? Are you like one of the players where you go on the injured reserve list and can't perform and can't suit up?
Well, it depends on the severe level of the injury, I would say. But with my sprained ankle, I was able to walk but not able to run around and dance. So what I personally had the chance to do when I was injured was do a lot of suite visits to the box suites at the game. So I still got to be a Jill, just from a different perspective for the day. So depending on the injury, we have different ways that we can still be involved.
So with the cheerleading, I mean, again, go back to your when you were younger and you were maybe just starting out. And again, you started out as a dancer. When you think of the other Jills that are on the squad, what's the kind of percentages? I mean, were they all dancers as youngsters, or were they cheerleaders? Were they gymnasts, or were some of them maybe not even involved in any type of activity like this?
Yeah, you hit it on the head. It's everybody has a completely different background. We have a lot of dancers as of late, and a lot of high school cheerleaders who have always been a fan of the Jills, and they're raised and born in Buffalo, and so they thought, hey, let's come try out for the Jills, and now it's their dream getting to be an NFL cheerleader. And there's gymnasts, there's even girls who have done diving and have come to do the Jills. So all sorts of different sports. Like you said, cheerleaders do more than one sport, and this is just a place where we are now in our lives, and we're really enjoying being part of the Buffalo Jills organization.
Very cool. So now tell me, I mean, many times, you know, when you work in sports, I've gotten the opportunity to interview a couple of general managers of some baseball, professional baseball teams, and some general managers of hockey teams. One of the things that they always tell me is they say, hey, Greg, you know, if a young person wants to become, in this case, let's say a cheerleader, and they love football, on average, I'm assuming you don't get to watch much football. How much of the game do you actually get to see?
Actually, we get to see quite a bit of it. We have the best seats on the field, in the stands. During the plays, we like to be very attentive to our team and watch, and then it's more so during the breaks, and especially commercial breaks is when we really have the opportunity to dance and do our sideline cheers. But a pretty good portion of the game we're lucky enough to get a glimpse of.
Okay, and what about, how do you, as the Jills organization, handle, you know, when you've got a few of those unruly fans or whatever yelling and maybe even throwing stuff on the sidelines, how do you guys deal with that in terms of, you know, the professionalism and what you do?
Yeah, that's a really great question. One of the first things we learned the very first night, it's called Rule Night, and we, all the Jills that have just made the team, we all meet up and we talk to our director, and she kind of gives us a lowdown on how to handle different situations. And we have etiquette training, starts from right when you become a Jill, and we keep learning more, and there's different situations that we'll be put in that no one's ever been put in before. And you just learn how to roll with it, and you learn how to stay professional and keep calm and cool. And our management and our director does an excellent job of preparing us for lots of different situations, because a lot of things have been thrown her way when she was Buffalo Jill back in the day.
And I'm sure both figuratively and literally. Hey, Emmy Thomas, a Buffalo Jill from the Buffalo Bills organization, NFL cheerleader, thanks for spending some time with us, and thank you for sharing your experiences as a Jill and a professional cheerleader. And, you know, hey, next week on U Sports Now, we're going to be talking to some more cheerleading types, if you will, with talking about dance groups and dance squads and how they work within the cheerleading industry as part of the U Sports programs.
WYSL 92.1 FM, 1040 AM. On the web with a live stream and the podcast at WYSL1040.com.
The voice of liberty. WYSL. You're listening to WYSL1040.com, 92.1 FM, and 1040 AM WYSL Avon Rochester.
I am Little League.
I am Little League.
I am Little League.
We are Little League.
I am Little League.
Sportsmanship, teamwork, character. Little League, big dreams.
Intellectually competent, loving, religious, open to growth, committed to justice. The words used to describe the young men who graduate from McQuaid Jesuit. Educating young men in grades 6 through 12, McQuaid focuses on the entire person, mind, body, and soul. There is a difference at McQuaid Jesuit. Why not find out for yourself? Go to McQuaid.org today to schedule your visit. That's McQuaid.org. McQuaid Jesuit. Live the experience.
Youth sports provide memories for a lifetime, so why not preserve them? TJT Sports Photography offers individual, team, and action photography of your all-stars. Whether you're a parent, league administrator, or school athletic director, visit TJTSportsPhotography.com to see the major league offerings. From peewee through high school, TJT Sports Photography gets the winning shot every time.
Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training is Rochester's trusted go-to source for sports performance training, injury prevention, and rehabilitation. Peak Performance, where you will find world-class experts just around the corner from home, where feeling better, finding confidence, and gaining superior performance are natural. Where traditional one-size-fits-all protocols are defeated by personalized performance plans that are as unique as each athlete. Where you are treated like a professional and are cared for like family. Where evaluation, recovery from injury, return to play, and competitive advantage are in the bag. So whether your athlete is a peewee player, an elite competitor, a seasoned professional, a wannabe weekend warrior, a couch contender, or a still active retiree, Peak Performance is your ticket to exceptional achievement. Make your move. We'll bring out the athlete in you. If Peak Performance is what you want, just ask for us by name. Peak Performance, where you will feel the difference.
Youth Sports Now on WYSL 92.1 FM and 1040 AM.
Youth Sports Now presents Your Peak Performance. Topics that support the well-being of your young athlete. Presented by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester.
We are back on Youth Sports Now, and it is time for Your Peak Performance. Brought to you by Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training. And our good friend Mike Naparella is here. Mike, how's things going?
Doing great, Greg. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. And you know, real quick, I hear there's a new addition, if you will, to Peak Performance Physical Therapy. Not necessarily an addition to the building, but an addition with one of your physical therapists.
Absolutely, yeah. Not actually a physical therapist. Our last new addition was Aaron Borsuk, who joined us back in the fall, but we've actually got a little one now. Not quite yet on staff, not hireable yet, but Mike Galassano and his wife Amanda just had a lovely baby boy, Landon, last week, and we're really happy for them, and mom and baby and dad. All are doing really well, so it's awesome.
That's great. A new parent, and of course, Mike has been on the show and has done some clinics, actually, with me out at Little League Field. So that's great. Congratulations to him. Hey, Mike, you know, we want to continue some of the conversations that we had last week from some of the parent questions that were emailed into us. And I think we want to pick up where there was a question about a 15-year-old boy, and the parents were concerned, you know, about the number of leagues that this young boy is playing in, and the question relates to how many leagues are enough when it comes to especially the wear and tear on the body of a 15-year-old. So why don't we pick it up there?
And I think that was a it's a really pertinent question. More and more now, Greg, oddly enough, we see young athletes coming in the clinic who are in fact involved in more than one league at the very same time for the very same sport. And so, you know, whether it's out of a desire for thoroughness or they just can't get enough, they love it so much, we as adults are put in that position, both as coaches and as healthcare and fitness professionals, to really try to give wise counsel and step back in the situation and think about, can you get too much of a good thing? And, you know, one of the examples I give our patients in the clinic when we talk about getting too much of something, you can drink enough water in a short enough time, literally in one day, to kill yourself.
Right. I've actually seen that. I think it was the back of a Snapple top.
And we would look at water and say water's good for you. It's not bad, mm-hmm. but you can take good things and have too much of them. And we sort of talked about those things in the vein of overuse injuries, right? We can have what is a fun thing, what's a good thing, it brings joy and has all kinds of great assets to it in terms of sports participation, but you can start to get too much of it to the point you cause trouble. And so this parent's question about how much is too much is a great one. The challenge is, I don't know. We don't know. We don't have an answer that's black and white across the board, but I think there are some key points that need to be looked at. And one of them is, do we see signs that the kid really loves the sport themselves, or is it becoming a job for them?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you've seen this in
Absolutely.
Coaching circles as well.
Yep.
We see times where it almost seems like it's enough of a job that the parent has to urge and motivate and push the young athlete to participate. And once they do, that happens. And there's a lot of other things in the background there, sort of emotional, behavioral, psychologically, in terms of where is their reinforcement coming from? Where is their love? Where is their approval coming from? And if it's so tied to athletics, sometimes I think the kids and the parents don't even maybe understand that dynamic. It's
sure.
not something out in the forefront. But in the background, what may be happening is the only time the kid ever gets a smile, the only time they ever get a pat on the back, the only time they even interact is centered around sports. And so there becomes this abstract sort of thing in the background that's at play all the time that someone can't put their finger on.
Sure.
But it's a very difficult situation, and we've got to be smart as parents and as educators and as coaches and as healthcare providers, certainly, to be mindful of, are we putting a kid in a situation of overuse? And so I'm not sure of too many situations where you should be involved in more than one league at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly many of these programs, basketball and volleyball and many other sports, lacrosse, they're tournament style situations, especially when they're in the off season. And so you're not just going out and playing one game. You may be playing two or three or four games
right
in a very short time. When we think about professional athletes, baseball is a little bit different because they do have double headers.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the pitching staff are the ones who take the biggest hit during those games, no pun intended.
Right.
and they switch them out, right? We've got multiple players to play that position.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a sport where it's a high power demand, a lower energy cost, standing and waiting, quick reaction, and then they get to rest again. But in a lot of the other sports that have multiple game tournament weekends, that is not at all the case. When
right.
you look at basketball and soccer and lacrosse, constant running, deceleration, change of direction, pounding, impacting, jarring, you never see the professionals play multiple games on the same day.
I couldn't
like
even
that.
Imagine a professional playing other than baseball, say, and maybe golf where they've got to play, you know, two rounds in one day. But I couldn't even imagine trying to play a basketball or football or a hockey game back to back.
And granted, these things may be somewhat shorter sequenced games, but it's still when you stack them up on each other and then you do more than one day in a row, it can add up. And that's essentially what the environment we create for an athlete when they put them in more than one league at the same time, or in fact, when there's times when they're doing two sport leagues at the same time, which can be very difficult. It may be manageable in some situations, but it can be difficult. So if you see a kid that's sort of dragging a bit, not wanting to go play, they may be sort of showing their cards
mm-hmm.
that they're doing this more for your sake, parent. They're doing this more for your sake, coach, than they are really for themselves. They're doing it for
right.
the dream of being told, this is what you got to do to be a scholarship player someday.
Right.
Even though right now you're only 10 years old, you're 12 years old. There's no need to be talking about scholarships right now.
And as we've talked, though, there's also this issue where you've got the, you know, you bring up a great point about other sports, say professional sports, where, you know, they don't play a football game back to back or a hockey game back to back. And yes, there are the few, which we talked about, baseball, you know, certainly, you know, golf, maybe even tennis with the matches. But those are all professionals. We're still dealing with kids.
Yeah, and those people are super normal humans, right? They're the ones who, if we believe in, they have the best genetics. There's some argument whether or not they really have different genetics or not. But if they have the best genetics, if they've had the best training, they have the best nutrition, they have people who are cooking for them, They're forced to take proper recovery methods. Most athletes are not doing proper recovery. They do all the right things, and yet they don't do what we're asking our young athletes to do. So I really respect this parent for asking this question. I think they've sort of already answered their question by asking it. And just knowing that they already, in the back of their mind, it sounds like, have some reservation about the idea of, should we really even be doing multiple leagues? And a kid may be very, not overzealous, but very excited about wanting to play. They just can't get enough. But we've got to manage that future so that we don't tear their body down.
Okay, so what do you do as a physical therapist and more when you have a young athlete come into Peak Performance? And I'm sort of combining a couple of questions here because I know there's a lot of different elements, but you've got that, youngster coming into you because of a problem. And the problem could be something with repetitive motion. It could be something with improper functionality with how they're doing things. But you ask, and the answer from the parents or the athlete is, well, I play in three leagues. And, it's all one sport. And, I have practice on Monday, Wednesday, Friday for one, Tuesday and Thursday on the other. And we play games on Saturday and Sunday. What do you do from the healthcare standpoint?
Well, and a lot of it comes down to exactly what we just said. That conversation has to be had up front with the parent. We've got to be honest. We've got to be careful of beating around the bush. But we want to be sensitive and honoring to them. Nobody's going out doing this intentionally to harm themselves as an athlete or to harm their kids that they love so dearly.
Right.
But sometimes all of our overzealousness, we can't get enough of a good thing. You open that bag of chips, you could have had just a few chips or a bowl full, but you end up eating the whole bag.
Right.
You go and have, a little bit of ice cream, all of a sudden the half gallon's gone. We sometimes just start to get too much of a good thing. We start to enjoy it too much. We can't stop and we can't see the reality of what impact it may have. And I think the same thing can be true, obviously, in sports. And so we just have to step back and be honest with them. And number one, remember that these are people who love their kids and their kids who love the sport. We don't want to rob them of that joy. But we also want to be respectful of the fact that this is a human body. It can and will and has. In fact, that's why you're in my office right now. It has broken down. And if you want to enjoy this for as long as you can, you've got to sometimes manage yourself through it. And sometimes it means putting the bag of chips back in the cupboard. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it means closing up the ice cream container. You can't just have everything you want at the moment and keep satisfying yourself. Because in the long run, from a physical standpoint, your body can start to break down. And again, I think it's a great point that you made. If pros aren't doing that and they have bodies that have been built for this, it's their job. They spend their whole day just working on preparing to be physically fit. And yet they don't do that to their bodies on a regular basis. Why do we ask our young kids to do that? And young athletes out there, why are you doing things that the very people you want to emulate would never do to themselves?
Sure.
To be at their very best. Our point is oftentimes here, please go out and have fun. Sports first should be about have fun. But for those who are out there trying to get somewhere, the kid who's on modified who wants to make JV, the kid who wants to start, not ride the bench, wants to be able to participate with his team. And for those kids who really do, in their heart of hearts, want to go play a college sport, you better go with a body that's in shape.
Right.
It was interesting in this topic we're talking about. I was talking with a friend's daughter just a few weeks ago during break. And she's a college sport. I won't divulge who or what it is, but she plays Division II college athletics. And it was a really interesting conversation because we had this very talk about injuries and staying healthy. And she talked about how the coach even has mentioned how many kids they need to bring in every year because of how many kids are injured throughout the season, that the coach is very mindful at that level of managing how many players are ready to roll at that level, because they are they're very well aware that a high percentage, too many, will be hurt during the season because of all that goes on. And they still got to field a team and be competitive. So even coaches are trying to manage the injury situation. And obviously that can be a good and bad thing. Some of the injury situation is being produced by overzealous training or inappropriate training, maybe on their part. But they're also trying to manage it and say, look, we've got to have kids who are healthy. And by numbers, we know so many are going to go down with an injury this year and not be able to play.
Well, that actually is an amazing story, because in that regard, not only does the coach have to worry about the injuries and making sure that he or she has enough players, but, you know, at the Division II or Division I level, you've also got to be worried about your job as a coach.
Absolutely.
You know, you're there to win, and let's not, you know, try to pull the wool over anybody's eye. The booster club is not going to keep you around, or the administration, if you're not winning games.
Absolutely true. And so having a healthy body, it behooves you as an athlete to have a healthy body. And we have to remember as adults, in the long run, it behooves all of us. You know, it keeps that kid that we love so dearly happy and smiling and on the field or on the court playing and having fun doing the thing they like. It also is easy on your wallet. You're not having to pay insurance co-pays and high deductibles.
Or even league fees and travel and all that stuff, too.
And all of those other things. So we just need to make sure that as adults and as young athletes, we're being responsible and not being too greedy with the things that we want to do.
Well, you know, Mike, I think, you know, you and the folks, your team at Peak Performance, you always have good advice. But I think, you know, one of the things that you said during this segment was the whole idea of, you know, the star athletes that these kids want to become, they would never do these things. And you know what? I mean, I'm sitting here listening to you, and we talk every week, and we even talk, you know, when we're not on the show. And that's hitting me like a ton of bricks, that I think that's going to be my line the next time I hear a parent say, well, he can't come to your practice because he has this or that practice, and it's the same sport. And yet we would never expect our pro athletes to ever consider something like that.
Absolutely.
Well, that's great. You know, Mike, one of the things that we had a question about, and we touched upon it last week, but I want to ask maybe a little bit more in depth is, you know, we've talked about repetitive motion in the past, and we had an email from a parent regarding concerns over their daughter who wants to be a tennis player, and the constant repetitive motion, where apparently a little more knowledge from what I got from the question is that this is a talented tennis player, and she has a coach who is a high school tennis coach, but also has a private coach. So now what's happening is the concern of the parents is that she goes to the high school practice and she's doing this repetitive motion of serving, constantly serving. And then she goes to her private coach, and guess what he or she has her do? Serve. So I wouldn't even begin to imagine, and the parents did not indicate in their email to us, how many serves she may do a day. But, I mean, you would never let a baseball pitcher throw, you know, 350 pitches a day. You would never let somebody in volleyball, at least I would hope not, serve 300, you know, serves a day. I have no idea how many serves this young lady is doing. But what about this repetitive motion and even the idea of two different coaches trying to teach something?
Yeah, you know, I did a little bit of looking up online in terms of early specialization. I think that both of these parents' questions, sort of, as you said, they sort of blend into each other. At the American Medical Society for Sports Medicine annual meeting in Utah a little while ago, Loyola University Health System presented a study that involved 154 youth athletes, and they looked at 92 boys and 62 girls, and they looked at them over a course of time and looked at the kids who got injured and the kids who didn't get injured. And they found some very interesting things. They looked at, you know, first of all, the kids who got injured were playing more over the week. They just had more volume. It was an average of 19.8 hours a week of athletic time versus 17 hours. The kids who were injured more, or the kids who got injured, were involved in lots of organized sport versus general play. So organized sport participation was very different from the kids who didn't get injured. And another big thing was they had this sort of early specialization score that they compiled. And the injured athletes had a much higher early specialization score than the athletes who made it through and weren't getting injured. So, again, some evidence that's pointing to this idea that although there's this old adage of you've got to have 10,000 hours to get in before you're going to be considered expert or elite, now, there's some other data out that's out that has gone back and looked at elite athletes, and tried to recalculate how many hours they actually get in. And oftentimes they're looking at it actually being 4,000 or 5,000, not 10,000 hours.
That's a big difference.
Because if you're trying to get 10,000 in, you calculate that out per day, per week, how many free hours a day you have, depending on when that athlete began. If they hear that, or a coach hears that, and they think, boy, we've got some making up to do, don't we?
Wow, right.
And then that you could be doubling, or in some cases close to tripling, what commonly is the actual truth. Not a general adage or a philosophy, but actually gone back and looked at elite athletes and said, how many hours did they put in? And it certainly, in most cases, wasn't 10,000, and it was 4 or 5 or less. And so I think we've got to be careful of just thinking more is better. There's evidence that suggests that's not the case. Some did not put those sorts of hours in. And then when you look at the repetitive motion like this, it goes to the same thing biomechanically that we've talked about before. We're seeing this a lot with volleyball players. We see this a lot with throwers. We see it a lot in tennis athletes, particularly with an overhead serve, is that if their trunk, if their shoulder blade, if their hips and their core aren't doing the right thing, they'll swing and hit that ball. And what we find so often, Greg, is that a young athlete, they may not have perfect form, but the point is they know I've got to get the racket on that ball at a certain point in the arc, and I got to make it get over the net at a certain angle. And then they figure out, if they don't have it from here, we pull it from here. So it's that rob from Peter to pay for Paul sort of thing. And as they do that biomechanically in their body, the places that were underperforming rarely hurt. They're sort of off hiding in the closet. The body part that put its hand up and said, I'll take the hit for all of you.
Mm-hmm.
I'll step up to the plate. I'll do extra. So the rotator cuff, for example, in a girl like this, the labrum in a girl like this, the shoulder capsule that keeps it stable, steps up and says, you can whack me. I'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
Because my next door neighbor, the shoulder blade, doesn't want to come out and play.
Right.
The thoracic spine doesn't want to move equally. And so you take a hit. And so when you're doing a repetitive motion sport that has a really powerful ballistic movement like that, as in tennis serving, it's a real concern. So what is too much? Well, someone should be talking to this girl about how much pain she has. When you talk to people who are in sports like this, rarely will they tell you, if you really push them, that they don't have pain.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of the first indicators that young athlete has to be able to step back and say, do I really need to serve so often, so hard, so many times that I get to the point of being painful to get better? And in fact, coaches and parents and athletes, if you're repetitively performing while you're in pain, are you certain that the money you spent, the time you're spending, the attention and focus and the travel and all the things involved with the coaching and training that's going on, are you really reaping the benefit for all that you're putting into it when that body actually is broken down a bit? Wouldn't we all be better served if that young athlete would, you know, give someone a call, give us a call.
Sure.
But give someone a call and go get seen, get those underperforming areas dealt with so they can go back and participate healthy. You give me any day, shorter duration, very high quality practice, I'll take that any day over long duration of kind of poor performing limited quality. Because in the long run, those high-quality performances, even though maybe shorter in duration, I didn't get my 10,000 hours. I got my 4,000 hours.
Wow, that's...
But it's going to perform better in the long run because you weren't dealing with a broken-down body that's constantly compensating.
Wow, you know, Mike, that is we're going to have to pick that up next week on Youth Sports Now. Mike, real quick, phone number to call you if they want to talk about, you know, a sports evaluation or coming in and seeing you?
Absolutely. We're at 585, obviously, our area code here, 218-0240, and our website is www.peakptrochester.com. You can check us out and learn more about what we do.
Great. Mike Naparella from Peak Performance Physical Therapy. When we come back, I'm going to have a little view from my dugout, which I hope isn't un-American.
Peak Performance
Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training is Rochester's trusted go-to source for sports performance training, injury prevention, and rehabilitation. Peak Performance, where you will find world-class experts just around the corner from your home. Where feeling better, finding confidence, and gaining superior performance are natural. Where traditional one-size-fits-all protocols are defeated by personalized performance plans that are as unique as each athlete. Where you are treated like a professional and are cared for like family. Where evaluation, recovery from injury, return to play, and competitive advantage are in the bag. So whether your athlete is a peewee player, an elite competitor, a seasoned professional, a wannabe weekend warrior, a couch contender, or a still active retiree, Peak Performance is your ticket to exceptional achievement. Make your move. We'll bring out the athlete in you. If Peak Performance is what you want, just ask for us by name. Peak Performance, where you will feel the difference. Call Peak Performance at 218-0240. That's Peak Performance, 218-0240. We'll be expecting you.
Youth sports provide memories for a lifetime, so why not preserve them? TJT Sports Photography offers individual, team, and action photography of your all-stars. Whether you're a parent, league administrator, or school athletic director, visit TJTSportsPhotography.com to see the major league offerings. From peewee through high school, TJT Sports Photography gets the winning shot every time.
Intellectually competent, loving, religious, open to growth, committed to justice. The words used to describe the young men who graduate from McQuaid Jesuit. Educating young men in grades 6 through 12, McQuaid focuses on the entire person, mind, body, and soul. There is a difference at McQuaid Jesuit. Why not find out for yourself? Go to McQuaid.org today to schedule your visit. That's McQuaid.org. McQuaid Jesuit. Live the experience.
Youth Sports Now on WYSL 92.1 FM and 1040 AM.
Regular listeners of Youth Sports Now know that every once in a while I go on a tear about an issue that I'm passionate about. I've never apologized about being tough on youth sports parents, coaches, or administrators, and stereotypically, even on myself. I've been critical of the professional sports leagues of this country, questioning them while wondering how our kids may perceive their actions and their motives. For me, the objective is to make us think when it comes to our kids and the sports they play. The life lessons taught through youth sports are endless and especially important during the development years of kids who are younger than age 13. But what happens when my rants and raves actually seem, well, un-American? I fear that's what I'm doing right now. Let me tell you a story. I was speaking with an 11-year-old basketball player and baseball player the other day. We were discussing championship sports teams while he posed a question to me that was followed up by his own profound answer. I appreciated that as a coach and a sports administrator and a parent because, you know what, I could not have answered this kid's question and there was no better response than the one that he gave. It seems that, let's call him Timmy because he and his parents asked that I don't disclose his real name, he had seen a story on ESPN about President Obama making a congratulatory phone call to the new national champions of college football, Florida State. During the phone call, the president apparently praised the team using all the expected sports cliches like perseverance, adversity, and comeback. The team was then invited to the White House to meet the president, and therein lies Timmy's quandary, and now mine. His question was simple. How come sports teams that win championships get to talk to the president and go to the White House? Timmy continued before I was able to reply. He said, "I mean, seriously, coach, they just play sports and they won a game. Just a game." The look on my face must have given away the fact that I had no answer and had never even thought about the question. This 11-year-old sensed this and stated with conviction, presidents shouldn't do that even if it's tradition. The guys who won a championship, and especially the ones who are still in college, they're not heroes or anything. As my jaw continued to hit the floor with this young athlete way beyond his age and wisdom, he just kept on going. First, heroes are people who do it all, and football players and guys like that aren't saving lives or protecting us or anything. Next, college teams are made up of kids and they haven't earned anything else, but they won a big game. I get it, coach. It's a big deal to them, but it's not like they saved the kid from a car accident or caught a bad guy. Wow. When they say out of the mouths of babes, they aren't kidding. Now, just a side note, this youngster's parents are not first responders or in any professional fields where his comments would be ingrained in him at this young age. I asked Timmy what he would do if he had the opportunity to talk to the president about whatever he could. He thought for a moment, took a long slurp from the soda he was drinking, and he smiled at me. He looked at me and he said, "Coach, that would be a private conversation, not like the ones they do on TV." Yes, out of the mouths of babes, and now I'm on a rip about real heroes never getting to visit the White House. That's the view from my dugout.
This has been Youth Sports Now. Rochester's only radio show dedicated to the youth athlete has been brought to you by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester, helping your young athlete achieve their peak physical performance, and by McQuaid Jesuit High School, and by TJT Sports Photography. Visit us on Facebook, Twitter, or our website at www.youthsportsnowradio.com.